You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. A diagnosis of a life-threatening illness is an enormous shockwave to any family. But when that diagnosis happens for a teen or a young adult, there are extra challenges. These kids know while their friends are getting ready for prom or for college, they're going through treatment or having tough conversations with family and doctors. Helping those conversations is the mission of Dr. Cynthia Bell, an assistant professor and a research scientist at the Wayne State University School of Nursing. Her special focus is on end-of-life conversations with teens and young adults. Cindy Bell, welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here.
And it's a pleasure to welcome Caitlin Salch. As a high school student, she was part of Cindy's study called Ready or Not. That's because Caitlin was diagnosed at age 14 with cancer. Today, she is a nursing student at Boise State University in Idaho. So it's a pleasure to say, Caitlin, welcome all the way in Idaho.
Thank you so much.
Very good to have you here. Cindy, I know you were an oncology nurse for many years and then went back and got your PhD. What drew you to want to study and explore these end-of-life conversations with teens and young adults? I think we're probably, talking ages about 13 to 24?
Right. So I guess I was drawn to that through my clinical experience. So I worked for many years taking care of patients, and I found myself in this job in 1997 where I was actually helping people through the cancer experience. When they did not get cured of their cancer, then I was allowed to help them in their home to end of life. And so what I witnessed with adolescents and young adults was just a lot of turmoil and struggle as that time became closer. And just witnessing that, you know, the interactions with the family, both were trying to be so strong for each other, not wanting to harm the other one by talking about it. And it was just a very interesting dynamic, but it was also very sad because they were kind of going along this trajectory, socially isolated from each other, although in the same environment.
And not wanting to upset the other.
Right.
So then things don't get talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And then this study, this Ready or Not research you did, what were you exploring?
So I was exploring if the adolescents do want to talk about it and what they want to talk about with their parents or their clinicians, providers, healthcare professionals.
And I know one of the things you've learned is you've developed a tool that helps people kind of get a sense of when someone is ready to talk or not.
Right. So the tool that we developed is based on the construct of readiness. So it has three domains: awareness, acceptance, and willingness. And so we find out how aware they are of their condition, how emotionally accepting they are, and what they're willing to engage in as far as discussions go. And so it's fairly interesting. I mean, they've taught me a lot, but overwhelmingly, I have found that they are willing to talk and are thankful generally that someone is asking the questions.
So it's getting the questions started and just kind of getting down that path.
Right, right.
Well, I want to turn now to Caitlin. And just, Caitlin, fill us in on your life a little. When were you diagnosed? And tell us about that.
So, like you said, I was diagnosed when I was 14 years old. I actually went to the hospital the first day of my freshman year of high school. So literally, it was like my entire high school experience. So I was originally diagnosed with synovial sarcoma. It's a soft tissue cancer, and I had a tumor on my diaphragm.
Wow. So then what happened? What kinds of experiences did you go through as you proceeded through high school? I mean, what a way to start your first day of high school.
Right? Yeah, it was great. Yes, I mean, in terms of treatment, I feel like I did everything. I did, like, chemotherapy. I've done radiation, surgery. After I got leukemia, I ended up doing a bone marrow transplant. I've gone down to Texas, and I've had referrals there. And so I feel like in terms of that, I've kind of done everything.
And so tell us where you are today. Where do things stand in terms of the cancer experience that you've been having and also the fact that you're in college?
The first time that I was told that, like, my prognosis was really not that good, I was in high school. I couldn't even drive yet. And I honestly never thought that I would even graduate high school, let alone make it to college and have all these like goals and career options and stuff like that in my life. So in terms of like the cancer, last summer in July, I got another scan and the MRI showed three pretty sizely tumors. And that's when I first went to MD Anderson in Texas. And one of the oncologists there, she claims that she's seen the most synovial sarcoma patients in the world. She essentially told me that I had a couple of months to live, and that was about it. My oncologist, though, wasn't going to like let that be an answer because she fought for me this entire time. And so I decided to do a chemotherapy. And so I moved home last fall and did a couple rounds of chemotherapy. And then we actually talked to a surgeon down at MD Anderson. He's amazing. And he felt that if we could get the tumors to shrink, that he would be comfortable to try to get them out and potentially make me cancer-free just by surgery and the chemo. And so far, I had a scan. I get them every 2 to 3 months now. And the first one has looked great. So this is amazing. Coming from, oh, you have like 2, maybe 3 months to now I can start planning years in advance. It's awesome.
Well, and I'm just thinking, it goes without saying the kinds of insights you're going to bring to your patients as a nurse. So let's just put that on the table right now. Caitlin, what were conversations with your family like through the years? Have they kind of evolved? I mean, from that first wave of news on your first day of high school?
Yeah, they definitely have evolved. Obviously, it starts out with like, okay, you have this diagnosis. What do we need to do to get rid of it? You know, it's very like hands-on, very positive. Like you don't want to talk about bad things because it's extremely scary and you don't know anything. And so pretty much they just start out, we're going to fight this. We can do this. We're going to be here as a family. Especially my parents, they always try to be super positive before a scan just because they know that I have a lot of anxiety about it. But if I talk to them about a scan, like after a bad scan, they'll be like, oh, I kind of had a feeling, but they didn't tell me that until afterwards. It's just because I've had so many bad ones that it does kind of shift to, like, we've talked about like advanced directives and wills and like, what do I want? And it kind of took a while for my parents to be okay with wanting to talk about that with me. And that was something that I've always kind of wanted to talk about just because it's real. It's right there.
Cindy Bell, what do you want to say about this amazing way that we're hearing Caitlin talk about this journey she's on?
I know. Caitlin she's so amazing. I mean, I am so inspired by your story, Caitlin. And I remember when I sat with you in the hospital. And I'm so glad, Caitlin, that you were able to have the advanced directives conversation, because I remember talking to you before. Your parents were, you know, really resistant to anything that had to do with death and dying, and you had shared some stories about that. So I'm really glad that you have at least been able to have those open conversations, you know, to plan for the what if, but to not have to, you know, at the last minute try to figure out for your parents and you what is it that you want.
And I hear conversations. So, you know, when we talk about it like an end of life conversation, it really is plural.
Exactly.
It should be.
It should be. And you know what? What we do, I think in pediatric oncology especially, I mean, we focus in a curative mindset. And so it becomes very difficult in oncology to have a conversation saying we can't do anything more, because then, you know, you almost feel like you're failing, you know? And so when we do finally admit to that and say we can do nothing more, just having that one conversation, I always call it the conversation. I feel like it needs to be the beginning of many conversations. And what happens and what I witness, you know, many times is just with providers, difficulty, you know, we don't want to do harm. We don't want people to lose hope. Hope is very important. And we always want to hope for miracles and hope that, you know, cure can come. There are many good things happening. But in the same time, we have to also say, okay, where are you right now? What do you have going on in your head? What can we help you with so that you can continue to live well? So the conversations, when we get them out, it's all about helping you so you can live with what time you have, whatever time that is.
If you just joined us, we're talking about having difficult conversations with teens and young adults who are facing life-threatening illness. We're talking with Dr. Cynthia Bell, who's an assistant professor and a research scientist at Wayne State University's School of Nursing. And we're talking with Caitlin Saul, who is a nursing student at Boise State University in Idaho. And she has been on a cancer journey since she was diagnosed her first day of high school at age 14. Caitlin, you know, there are so many movies and TV shows and books that try to tell the stories of people who are on a cancer journey or are facing life-threatening illnesses. What do they get right and what do they get wrong in your view?
For the most part, if something has to do with like cancer or like a child or a teen getting cancer and like I know about it ahead of time, I honestly kind of avoid it. just because I know that, like, I'm going to start crying or that something's going to come up. But obviously, like, it does show up. And, you know, a lot of things, I don't think they get right. But I do think some of the things that are, like, bigger deals, they do understand or they can portray in a certain way. I was just watching a TV show. This woman was doing chemo treatments and her hair was finally starting to fall out. And she just decided to shave it off. And while she was shaving it, she started, like, laughing and smiling type of thing as to feel, like, liberated. And I just got super, like, nope, that's not right. That is not how that goes. Like, it's the worst thing of your life. Like, that is the most traumatic thing I've had to go through, which sounds kind of superficial. But, you know, when you're 14 years old and you just started high school, that's kind of a big deal.
You bet. Caitlin, what about new people in your life? Here you are, you're off to college now, Boise State University. So when you meet new people, do you choose to tell them? And if so, when and how? I'm wondering if you've got a certain approach or phrase that maybe is your go-to approach. How do you do this?
So when I first meet somebody, I don't want them just to automatically think of me as the person with cancer or who's had cancer or something like that, just because I don't know if they change their opinion on you, but how they react with you and interact with you changes. And I don't think they mean to, but it just does. It's kind of like they feel sorry for you that you had to go through that. And so I think it's kind of like they almost distance themselves right away. But yeah, I think I might be different than a lot of people as I'm very open about it. Like, honestly, I don't think there's a question anyone could ask that I'm going to be offended by and not want to answer. And so, however it kind of naturally comes up in a conversation is usually just how I go about, like, talking to them about it.
Cindy, when you think of what you've learned, what are the best pieces of advice that you could offer families who have a teenager, a young adult who's on that journey? What are the do's and don'ts, if we could make it that? Is it that simplistic?
I think the do's are to be present, to trust yourself, to not be afraid to ask, and to ask a very open question, like, what is it like right now in your life today? What's it like for you? And let them tell you the story. And so I think just asking the questions, that's the biggest thing. I mean, you have to ask, and then you have to be willing to hear. And then also be sensitive enough to know that you don't always want to live in that place. You know, so there are these stages of awareness, you know, that you can go through. And Glaser and Strauss wrote about this in a study they did, a classic study in 1968. And they found that, you know, you can be in closed awareness where you don't know, like if you have a terminal illness, you don't know if you're going to die from it, right? But the doctor does. And then you can go into this suspected awareness where you're kind of like, maybe I do have this. And you're looking for cues. Then you move into this stage called mutual pretense, where you know and the doctor knows what's happening, but you both decide not to talk about it. So you mutually kind of agree not to talk about it. And then you have open awareness where both know, and then you openly communicate. Well, what I found with adolescents is that, you know, when they move into that open awareness with, oh my goodness, I could die from this, like they don't want to stay there. They might want to be there for a moment or for a time to process things, but they need to go out of that, and you need to let them go out of that, and you need to let them be in those places where they have hopes and dreams and want to accomplish goals. And like Caitlin, actually, she's assisted with cancer research in her university. She's a brilliant, you know, scholar, and so she could do anything she wanted to do, but like allowing her to continue to have those dreams and those hopes and those goals. Very, very important developmentally for a young person. Their life doesn't stop just because they have a life-threatening diagnosis. And so just being open to talk about that in the same way that we're encouraging these other very difficult conversations that no one wants to have with them.
And it goes back and forth.
Back
I'm sure,
and forth. Back and forth. Yes.
Caitlin, anything you want to add to that? What are some do's and don'ts based on what you've experienced?
You know, I think Cindy was completely right when she said that, you know, we go into these like little moments where we do kind of panic and we're thinking about it a lot. And we're like, okay, you know, this is real. What if I do die? I kind of want to have a plan. I want my parents to know, you know. And I definitely had those moments, and they weren't very often, but they did happen. And I think it is really important to be there. And I didn't necessarily need somebody to start the conversation, for me at least. I just needed somebody to listen. It wasn't necessarily that I wanted them to reply or try to change my mind or anything of the sorts. I just kind of wanted them to listen to my fears and hear me out at where I was in that moment. And just being able to say it out loud kind of was enough for me to get through it. My dad was that person for me when I would have those moments of like, oh my gosh, I'm really scared. I don't want to go to treatment tomorrow, or I can't go on anymore. When you have those feelings, like when I would talk to my dad and he would just listen to me. He would never try to say like, oh, are you just trying to like give up, or okay, fine, we won't go tomorrow or anything like that. He was just there to listen to me. And when I was done, I would be crying, but he would be there and he would just give me a massive hug until I was ready to let go. And he would just be there to support me. And I definitely had those different stages of awareness. And I've had a couple real questions for them. Like this last time, it was really, really bad. And I had to decide if I wanted to do chemo or just, you know, live my life here until it was the end, you know, because there was a chance that it wasn't going to work. And then I'd be bald and miserable before I died. And I didn't want that either. And so one day, just when I was thinking about it so much, I called her and I was like, hey, am I going to die, or when, how? Because these were real questions that I had when I was contemplating doing chemo. And she was honest with me. She told me how I would most likely die from this and potentially like a timeline of when. And it was the honesty that I was ready for and that I needed.
Well, I'm just saying your patients are going to be very blessed when you bring your insights and your caring. Mm-hmm. Cindy, you've got this tool with these questions and cards. Is that something that people can access? Is that, or is it for other professionals?
Oh, yeah. So it's in the very early stages of development. So we've developed the tool and we've validated it with content experts. And then we've tested them in people like Caitlin. So we've gone through and said, talking to my doctors or nurses about my illness makes them sad. And Caitlin would say, not at all true, somewhat true, generally true, almost always true. And so if we know, like, if they understand it or if it's clear enough, if they don't even think it's important, like, we had some ones that were really sensitive. And so that's what I think I appreciated most about, you know, going through that validity testing with the adolescents and young adults themselves. And so if it was a little too sensitive, I mean, they weren't afraid to say, you know, hey, that's a tough one. And I think it's an important question, but I wouldn't want to talk about that all the time. So maybe just picking the right time to say, do you want to have your, you know, if my disease would continue to progress, do I want to have conversations with my parents about end-of-life discussions? And so I think we're learning a lot from it. So what we need to do at this stage is another study. We're going to involve parents and healthcare professionals and the patient and kind of test some of these items out. But hopefully, science takes forever, but hopefully it will get into the hands of the right people with all these awesome adolescents and young adults like Caitlin that are helping us to figure out how we can make the best tool or instrument for them.
Well, it's been just a pleasure to talk with both of you. Caitlin Saul, thank you for sharing your story and best of luck with your nursing studies.
Yes, Caitlin.
Thank you so much.
And Cindy Bell, assistant professor and research scientist at Wayne State University School of Nursing, thank you.
Thank you.